Hello and welcome to Wise Women, The Vicar and the Witch. I'm Maggie Whitehouse and I'm the Vicar.
And I'm Susie Crockford and I'm the Witch. We are perceived, perhaps, as being on opposite ends of a spectrum, but we're friends and we see the common threads of our different experience of the sacred. So please join us as we discuss
life, the universe and everything. Hello again and welcome. And today we have to confess infidelity to each other, don't we?
I see. You're calling me unfaithful. I didn't know you had also been unfaithful.
I have, but not in any earth-helping way like you.
Okay, spill the beans.
No, you spill your beans first.
Okay, so should have mentioned it last week because literally that very week I had been on a really beautiful panel discussion organised by a lovely woman called Catherine Jordan, who's running a long series of Facebook Live events, and I think it's now become a blog as well, all about community resilience. Mm. And I think it's specifically as a kind of response to COVID and to lockdown. Mm. But my hope is very much actually that she continues the conversations for as long as she's got willing volunteers to come and speak in them and people listening, because the response is clearly, you know, these are great. And I listened to the ones who were on before me and they are such good conversations. She basically gets three people who are, you know, offering something by way of a healing or a wholeness invitation. Gosh, that's bad English. Sorry about that sentence. In the world, and getting them to come together in groups. I don't know if it's a deliberate premise that they don't know each other, but I thought it was particularly good that we didn't know each other. Mm. Because it meant that we didn't suppose anything. We laid everything out card-wise on the table, as it were, sort of thing, and had this really lovely conversation about what is it that we are doing, what is our particular one was called Sacred Response, and we discussed what is our sacred response. So, yes, I was unfaithful on Facebook. I own it.
And what was your sacred response?
Will brazenly not apologise for it. Can I tell you about the other thing?
Oh, yes, but I want to know your sacred response. Go right ahead.
So the other thing was that the week before, I was interviewed by the very, very gorgeous Kate Hewitt-Taylor, who lives down the road from me here, for the Schumacher student podcast, which is called Edgewise. And that was a glorious conversation between the two of us. Although she calls me her local witch, I reckon she's definitely at least half a witch in the making herself. And she is, like me, an inveterate wanderer of the Cleave. And we spoke about what is it to speak on behalf of nature? Mm. And how can we make sure that we're not just standing in ego when we speak on behalf of nature? It was a really, really lovely conversation. Yeah. And you can, if you're interested in listening to that, or indeed listening to the Facebook one, they're both available on my page.
And if you sent me links.
Oh, we could put them under this.
I'll put them up on the Podbean. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so, I mean, sacred response was much what we discussed last week, really. It was my own sacred response is a kind of combination of those two conversations, in that it is very much to go outside, to go to nature, to shut the fuck up with the whole, I call her the inspector, that one who rambles on inside your head. Mm. She's always got something to say about something. Mm. And to just, you know, ask her, politely or not so, depending on the day, to go and sit in a corner and be quiet. You know, go and do something nice for yourself.
Yeah, I have you, but you do not have me.
Yeah.
Yes.
While I just be quiet and listen and be. Mm. And I think that is probably the foundation stone, actually, of sacred response to me, is to be. And to recognise that you are part of an indivisibly interwoven, ensouled whole, and to allow yourself to experience that without the inspector saying, you're making it up, don't be so stupid, blah, 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 blah. And that from that being can emerge then you actually being able to hear the wisdom of nature, and she is full of wisdom, and the other voices other than the, you know, mad woman in the attic that is the voice in your head, and other than the ego and other than our culture. And that, you know, sometimes you might, well, as we've discussed before, sometimes you might walk up to a tree and it might tell you to, you know, take a hike, mate. And sometimes you might walk up to a tree and it might go, breathe with me.
Yeah.
You know, soften, drop, lie down.
Can we talk a little bit more about ego, what ego is? Because it's such a moot point. People just, well, what do you mean by my being in my ego rather than being in nature?
So I'm not a psychotherapist, no. So this might well be completely wrong.
But it will be interesting.
Okay. But my understanding of our ego is that the ego, to a degree, is the chattering self, if you like. It doesn't always chatter necessarily, but that chattering self. So there is, the ego is the one who is relating the narrative to us as we go along. So the ego is the one who is going, oh, there's a big nice rock. Look at that rock. Isn't it lovely? Oh, look, there's a raven sitting on that rock. How interesting. Gosh, I wonder how many other ravens there are. Yada, 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 yada. That's the ego to me. And the ego gets a lot of bad press, actually, but the ego is supremely important.
And useful.
And useful. Yes. So useful. Yeah. I mean, the ego is the one that tells us our stories. Mm-hmm. The ego is therefore the one who can change our stories. Mm-hmm. The ego fundamentally is the one who is here to look after us. So they're the one that's going, you know, no, 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 no. Don't just go larking around at full pelt over there because last time you did that, you fell down and you know, you smacked your face in the dirt, and this time you could break a tooth or something. You know, the ego is responsible for keeping us safe. But typically, the ego's way of making us safe is to go, just stay how you are, love, it's fine. Because change is always a risk. There is risk inherent in change, and therefore change implicitly is, to be very exaggerative about it, is danger. Mm. And the ego is designed to stop us from heading into danger. Mm. And so when I say to drop away from the ego, I'm talking about, in a way, I'm talking about closing my ears to the narrator, to the chattering mind, and instead being with the observer, the one who is deeply, deeply, deeply in relationship, but does not yet need to turn it into a story.
I think that's a beautiful way of looking at it, because yes, the true self is the watcher.
Mm.
In Terry Pratchett's Tiffany Aching stories, the teenage witch, little witch, on the chalk, on the Discworld. She calls it first sight, second thoughts, third thoughts.
Oh, I read one of those. I read the first one. I loved that.
Yes.
First sight, second thoughts, or first something.
Third thoughts. Yeah. When you see something and you immediately go, it's a robin. And then the second thought goes, oh, that robin doesn't look very well. Or that robin doesn't, or why? What's the significance of the robin? And we'll chat about the robin. And then the third thoughts are, why am I distracting myself with this? And why am I thinking it's the watcher, the part of you.
Well, and or what is the significance of this robin
exactly.
To me?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Why is this moving me? Why is this touching me? I was talking last week about when Sappho ran off on the moor, and I was observing my anger.
Yeah.
And that's the third thoughts, which is, okay, you're really feeling this anger. We need to throw a rock or two.
Yeah, okay. What I also mean by that is that because nature, I can't bear the expression nature. For me, it's such an othering expression.
Yes,
but I find myself using it all the time because my ego hasn't spent enough time on this and I haven't come up with a better word. But so the rest of life, the more than human world, because it is an indivisibly interwoven, ensouled whole of which we are a part, it is speaking all of the time.
Yes.
And everything in it is full of spirit. So everything in it has an opportunity to be more or less of a voice on behalf of the divine. And so, for example, you can be bumbling along, or I might be bumbling along, and I'll suddenly see a squirrel, and then maybe I'll see another squirrel, and then another squirrel, and I'll be like, whoa, okay, what's with the squirrels? Mm. And so the chattering mind can go, bloody squirrels, you know, what do you want on a suicide mission? I'm in a hurry, you better watch out, you know.
And then the third thoughts come in
and say, okay, squirrels, to me, if I keep seeing squirrels, or if a squirrel's really, you know, wow, there's a squirrel, I need to notice it, might just be one squirrel. Yeah. Is the universe, for want of a better expression, spirits asking me, are you resourced? And that, I saw a lot of squirrels at the beginning of lockdown.
Yeah.
And there are lots of things that, you know, they become a dictionary between us and the more than human world, a dictionary of omens, basically. Mm. And so we can be engaged in this third thoughts conversation with the rest of life in a way that's really, really nurturing to us, because it's not our ego we're talking to.
Yes.
It's the rest of the living, breathing world.
And we need those third thoughts, because when we... I had a client once many, many years ago who was in love with a Muslim guy who was going to have an arranged marriage to another woman. She wasn't Muslim. And you could see from the outside it was going to be... Because he was sleeping with her and promising her all sorts of things which weren't going to happen, and she believed that they weren't going to happen, all that kind of thing. And she would say to me, I asked for a sign that he would marry me, and I saw the sign. I asked for a white feather or a butterfly or something like that, and I saw it. And the difficulty with that is that if you program your ego with the sign you expect to see, as the ego controls your eyes and your ears and what you actually perceive from them, it'll start looking.
Mm-hmm.
And I would tell the story about when I met my ex. After he met me, he started seeing red Citroens everywhere because I drove a red Citroen.
Mm.
There were no more red Citroens, but his ego was looking for the sign because it meant me.
Yeah.
So it's always difficult without signs. I think you have to have signs you're not specifically looking for, you know, so the third thoughts can come in and go, oh, hang on, was that it?
I totally agree. That's like, that would be like asking you a question, and instead of waiting for the answer, which is third thoughts, telling you what the answer is going to be and asking you if that's right, and then not even giving me the opportunity to say whether or not that's right.
Yes, that is absolutely ego. And the other way to recognise it, in my experience, is it's this thing again of it needs instant gratification.
Yeah.
I can be sitting there starting off my meditation and that little voice will come in and say, you haven't checked whether you're seeing so-and-so at 10 o'clock or 11 o'clock on Zoom. You better go and look now. Gotta go and look now. Gotta go and look now. Gotta do it now. You just need to do this. You need a pee. It's your ego that tells you, oh no, you can't meditate. You've got an itch on your nose, that kind of thing. Because it just wants to stop you just getting to those third thoughts, because the third thoughts can be scary. They're going to make you assess things and make you a witch, which means your family won't love you, so you won't get fed, so you'll die.
That's oh my how God, is primitive that what's gonna it happen is. To me?
You confess to me you haven't made biscuits for the family this morning, so...
Oh, I'm sorry. No one's going to love me. They won't be fed and I'll die. Luckily, it's me that knows how to make the biscuits. Yes, that is... Yes. That is my naughty lockdown confession. I really didn't in the other lockdowns. I didn't, as far as I remember, but this might be my ego carefully smoothing over the bed covers, but I don't remember acquiring any dirty habits. But this time, yeah, I've made a lot of biscuits recently.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. Right. Well, it was my turn to pull a tarot or an oracle card today, mm-hmm. wasn't it?
Yeah, it so was.
I have done a vast success. I have only got two oracle card decks. One is the Rider-Waite Tarot and the other is the Medicine Cards, which is a North American book and cards using your power animals.
Yeah.
You pull your power animals. So I thought to myself, well, I'll ask Susie if it's all right if I pull an oracle card today, because I haven't done one yet. My ego wanted to, and I've got this lovely pack.
Oh, but totally, totally, you must.
Well, you've got the same pack, so it's jolly decent of you to let me pull it. So guess what I pull? Blank card.
wonderful.
And they have blank cards, which means that, you know, the question can't be answered, or you have to put your own power animal in. Mm. And as is my wont, I thought, well, maybe that was just me being incompetent. This is the ego. Pull another one.
So you pull the same one again.
Two blank cards. I'll hold them up to the screen for you to see.
Oh, my God!
I think there's only three in the whole pack.
I think there are. That's hilarious. You didn't even put it back and pull the same one again.
No.
But you still managed to pull two blank cards. That's fantastic.
That is fantastic, isn't it? Annoying, but fantastic.
No, it's glorious. Okay,
but doesn't it go to show that there's something to the oracle cards?
Oh, most definitely.
Because with most packs, you have to pull something.
Yes.
You're always going to pull something which has got a message. But that's one of the things I love about this pack, is it doesn't have to give you a message.
Okay, no, I completely disagree. I think it has given you a message.
Okay, go on.
So for me, the blank... our question always, and I'm assuming this was your question when you shuffled, is what would be of the most benefit to, you know, us and those who listen for us to talk about? Mm. And as an answer to that question, I believe that the blank card is telling you, hey, Maggie, you talk about your power animal and your experience of, well, the maybe the medicine cards themselves or your experience with the oracular, because it's not giving you something else to talk about. It's showing you yourself, kind of thing.
Yes. What is my power animal? Well, I've got my shamanic power animal, which is the owl.
Mm.
And actually, when I was ill years ago, I started walking the hounds at night in the dark.
Mm.
And in those days, I was taking just Dessie, and you could safely let her off the lead. She'd go after a hare, but nothing else. And I was walking in one of the fields and feeling sorry for myself, and this incredible snow-white barn owl just lifted itself off the ground in front of me, like the most incredible ghost, you know, terrifying. But it was literally awe-inspiring.
Yeah.
And that when people say that word, oh, that's awesome, I usually cringe, because real awe is a little bit more than that. So I think my power animal is the owl, but it's basically... my power animal is whatever creature I see.
Okay. Why?
Well, because there's always a message.
Yeah, okay, so I'd call those omens.
Whereas, omen animal, yes.
Yeah, whereas enough. I'd say your power animal is the animal who... So for me, a power animal is a really, really, really strong and potent message from the spirits about your power. So when you go to the lower world and you seek your power animal, you are inquiring of the spirits, what am I beyond my ego? So this, of course, is the perfect conversation to be having, given what we've started. Yes. What am I beyond my ego when I am my true self, when I am absolutely embodying all of what is divine in me? Tell me about that. And that, because we are microcosm of the macrocosm, we exist also in all the three worlds that shamanism and many other versions of reality see. But only in the middle world do we have our ego, because that's where material reality exists. So in the lower world we have our power animal, but they're beyond the material and beyond the ego. And in the upper world, we have our, in core shamanism, tutelary spirit. In Christianity, angel. They get called guides or all sorts of different things. But both the upper world and the lower world spirits, because they are outside of the material world, they could take any form at all. They could be a Land Rover behind with a unicorn front, you know. The laws of the physics just don't apply. And so when they present themselves to us, they are doing so for a reason. And that reason is that they want us to know this thing about ourselves. And so, in my opinion, the spirits wish you to know that extraordinary wisdom that we associate with an owl, and that capacity for cold, clear sight, but not in a bad way, just in a not entangled and attached way, and representative of the divine feminine, is something that they want you to know about you. And I would say that that is a pretty accurate description.
Thank you.
Of you.
Thank you. Well, my other power animal is the Black Panther.
So from what I know of you, and sorry to keep contradicting you, but that's actually your body protector
within the shamanism. That's protector. Well, no, this is marvellous, you see, because I'm learning more. Yeah, okay, my body protector. Yes, I would get that. Actually, I have two. I have a jaguar. I love saying jaguar.
Jaguar.
I have a jaguar on one side and a black panther on the other, because they're the same species but different colouring.
Yeah, I remember when we did these journeys.
Yes,
and they're your body protectors, not
right?
Your
okay, animal. And they are—they interest me because I am not a fan of cats. But those two big cats—it's the way they walk, and it's—I think it's sort of—it's the fact that the lesson that they give me is that they don't rush around doing things; they just pad along. And if they need to catch dinner, perhaps the last minute involves a little bit of running around and a bite. But the rest of it's just preparation and strategy, which is similar to the owl, which is Athena's creature. And Athena is goddess of strategy and goddess of peace, actually, of how do we work this out without attacking.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, beautiful. But, and also, actually, I've just quickly got to tell you this, because it is one of the, to me, sublimely funniest moments ever in one of my workshops was that I, you know, on the introduction to journeying, I teach people to journey to non-ordinary reality, to find their way there, to meet their power animal, to meet their body protector, to meet their upper world tutelary spirits. And one of the questions that I invite them to ask when they meet their body protector is, how do you protect me? And this participant, who was, I guess it makes it all the funnier because it was a young man, and he went on this journey and his body protector was a jaguar. And so he, you know, absolutely sincerely and beautifully said to the jaguar, how do you protect me? And evidently the jaguar turned around, kind of looked him up and down and went, dude, I'm a jaguar.
Loved it. Yes.
And it, you know, it doesn't take more than a moment's reflection to wonder how one or even two large cats might protect you with those claws and teeth and incredible eyesight and extraordinary speed, etc., etc., you know. I just thought that was so, so funny. I loved it.
And it's one of those things that you know it is spirit because it just cuts through the crap so beautifully, doesn't it? It doesn't say anything really wanky bollocks like, well, I am the symbol of your inner power and you're this and you look at me and you're, no, I'm a jaguar.
Yes! Belt up, mate! Yeah. I mean, that one of the things that I will never get tired of in all the years I've ever taught this is that in every introductory workshop, most, if not every single one of the participants will say the words, I didn't expect that. And you know that spirit is participating in partnership with you to bring you what you need rather than what you expect or what you made up.
And there are such beautiful moments like that. Last week in the Kabbalah group, we went back to the upper room. We do that quite a lot, to go up to work together. And there were two things that one of them really brought out that he wasn't expecting. The idea, we all went up to this upper room together. And he experienced us all there. So it was the first time he'd done a meditation with he's in Washington, D.C., and there was somebody in Australia. And he said, we were all there. We were all there. I wasn't expecting that. And also, gorgeous. There's a part, there's a room off the main room, which is the soul group room, which is our individual room for our own private teaching. And he said he'd been doing a certain call meditation to be in touch with one of the aspects of the Indian pantheon, a goddess aspect. And I don't know why he's been doing that, but fair enough, he's been doing it. And he said, I've really got nowhere with it. It's not I was beginning to think of giving it up because you're supposed to get into relationship with this aspect, which is part of you. And he said, and I've been doing this for 6 months and I haven't got anywhere. And he said, I opened the door, walked into my room and there she was.
Wow, fantastic.
And that was the last place I was expecting her. So coming back, you'd think,
Yes.
And that's what I'm trying to say. You go to this upper room, you actually move your consciousness up and sometimes you just sit there and nothing happens, and mm-hmm. that's fine mm-hmm. because nothing needs to happen. But the ego needs something to happen. So I always say to them, nothing may happen.
Yeah, and surely in many ways, nothing's a good thing.
Yes.
Nothing's a great thing. You chill out. You're doing all right.
You're doing all right. Nobody needs to run up to you and go, oh, God, oh, God, oh, God, do this, don't do that, don't do the other. Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, so we have basically nothing to talk about, and we've been talking about nothing beautifully, haven't we? What's your power animal?
My power animal, well, bizarrely, that's a slightly hard question to answer in that my power animal, when I was a kid, was an elephant. And it was clearly an elephant. And the message over time became super overtly clear that it was an elephant so that I would learn to take up enough space in my own life and stop hiding.
Yeah.
And then one day, when I was still in my teens, my power animal very, very, very clearly became a wolf. Mm. And probably if 99.9% of the rest of the world had asked me, what's your power animal, I would have told them it was a wolf. But I had the most extraordinary experience. So my power animal is a wolf, and my upper world tutelary spirit was this being, male, who is both a man and a raven. Mm-hmm. And so he is Bran, basically, from British mythology. And he has the cauldron that Bran has, and he has lots of the aspects of Bran. And that all blows me away, because he'd been the man who was also a raven who brought a cauldron to the healing work that I do for ages before I came across the story of Bran.
Yeah.
Anyway, one day, some years ago, not that many years ago at all, the whole of my non-ordinary reality turned itself on its head, and all of a sudden, Bran was down and the wolf was up. And the wolf sat itself in a circle of other wolves in the upper world, who all sit around an obsidian table and are a source of incredible wisdom, extraordinary wisdom. And Bran, the man raven, went to the lower world. So strictly speaking, within the narrative of if it's down...
Mm. It's protection, and if it's up, it's...
Well, no, if it's down, it's the lower world, and if it's up, it's the upper world. Then if you really stick to the kind of
protocol,
letter of the law or something with that, then my power animal is a raven. So, but to be honest, I don't feel any need at all to nail it down.
Exactly. I was just going to say that.
Yeah.
We nail things down when we're learners, when we're beginners, because otherwise it's just too big and too scary and too much. We haven't got the discipline of mind, heart and soul to have the sight that we need, the clarity of sight. We'll get beaten up by the distractions. So,
yeah.
But once you're deeper in the work like you, it doesn't fit the protocol necessarily.
No. And also that it's all, you know, it's all a metaphor anyway.
Mm.
The idea that the other world is over there and that spirits look like animals or peoples or anything is all a metaphor for things which would be impossible to grasp and impossible to speak about, really, if we didn't make and be taught by the spirits these very, very exquisitely simple metaphorical stories.
Yes.
And therefore, in their role as teaching stories and as metaphor, they are both the gospel truth. And totally not how it is at all.
Mm.
So,
that's a perennial truth. That's a myth. That's what myth means. It's ultimately absolutely true, but it's told through a story.
Yes.
Which may be totally untrue.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's nice.
That wonderful
yeah.
yes and.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, yes and.
Magical. Oh, that's lovely.
Is there a place, I'm sorry, I'm being silly, but is there a yes and, like there's a yes odd?
Well, yes odd is ye little sod, as far as I'm concerned. And the true self in Hebrew is teferet, which is the ferret.
The ferret.
So you've got a little sod and a ferret, you know, but the ferret's the one that can kill the little sod if necessary.
So the little sod, yes sod, was, you were talking about that last time we spoke, about how you kept saying it was the gonad chakra, but then it was also the sacral chakra. The sacral chakra.
It's the second one
but,
up.
Yeah, but your gonads, were you to have gonads, would so not be up there. How does it get up there? I got very confused about...
Well, it's just the verbiage I was taught, so it's obviously wrong, which is...
Well, it's not necessarily wrong at all, is it? Because I don't know. I was wondering if gonads start up where your ovaries are, because I know your testicles descend, don't they, when you're smallish?
Yes, I think it may mean sex organs, sex areas, so it would be the uterus for a woman.
Mm.
And it would probably be the extension of the penis that goes up.
Up, right.
Rather than the actual... dangly bit.
Or
magnificently strong, firm and erect bit, whichever one you're on at the moment.
Clearly this is not a podcast with two biologists speaking.
But it's like the clitoris. There's so much of it that is right up inside you, and I think that's what it's talking about
when right.
it means gonadic chakra. It's the source of the sexual urge, the reproductive urge.
Right, right, right. Yes, I was extremely confused at the beginning of that because
well, you were very polite. What the fuck are you talking about? Why yes. that would have been totally appropriate. But that's actually another thing. When you come into spiritual work and you shift different cultures. When I started this, I was in the New Age of some Buddhism, some this, some chakras, some the other, and you can get a sort of mongrel language, which means that you aren't necessarily understood or even making any sense whatsoever. But if you know what you mean, hopefully if somebody will question you, you can explain it. And then you go, well, that should be called the so-and-so. And you go, nah, it's my little sod.
Love it. Yes. Yeah. I was speaking with a woman the other day who, oh, Lord, what was the one? Oh, damn it. Anyway, she was saying that she'd particularly enjoyed the podcast before last. And now I can't remember what we were talking about, but had been confused by the previous one where we were talking about the mycelium because I'd been looking at the mushroom tarot.
Yes.
But I think we had somehow managed to really not be clear at all about whether we were talking about mushrooms or tarot cards. And so if you're networks of mycelium, if that doesn't really mean anything to you, I'm reasonably confident that what she was saying was that she had thought we were talking about some kind of esoteric aspects of tarot cards that she completely didn't understand.
Oh,
and to be fair, English is not her first language. But
oh, yes.
I was just really reflecting on, oh God, yeah, when you've got, I mean, you and I at least can see each other through a funny little oblong screen thing, but everyone else is only listening.
So they can't see our facial expressions, our body movements, whether we're uncomfortable or happy or yes.
Yeah, but, and I don't know whether I'm sure, you know, perhaps in that particular instance, it wouldn't help at all to have been able to be with us more in some way other than our voices. But yes, it made me sort of note to self, try and be more clear.
Yes, and actually that's a really relevant thing about this mycelium, because to be fully in relationship, you do need to be present with somebody.
Mm.
And we can't be present with each other. We're doing okay through screens because we have been present with each other.
Yes.
Not as much as we would like this last year, but we have. So there's a memory of that. And that is a mycelium. That memory is a link between us. And when people join you on a Zoom class and they see you, there's still a certain mycelium going on. But when you're just listening to somebody, in some ways, that's marvellous because you can make up some of your own mycelium. But if you get lost, like we weren't clear, the losing is much greater then because you can't pick up the weaves so well, can you?
Yeah. Yeah. And that I think one of the reasons that so much of, in inverted commas, spiritual work has translated so well to Zoom is that you are working in non-ordinary reality. Mm. And so those connections are really overtly, clearly there. Mm. And then Zoom's enough. It's not as good as being in the same room as somebody. Yeah. Of course it's not. But it's enough.
Yeah.
Whereas when you are, you know, doing something like this, well, actually, though, even you and I, we're probably easier to listen to, perhaps, than people who've never met, just talking and not being in the same place, for exactly the reason that you just said, because we have got that connection between the two of us. Yeah, I'm slightly rambling on and I'm not really clear what my point is. But
I know what you mean. Yes, it's... but you do need the memory and you do need the background for that to work, I think. Because if you just come straight to a Zoom class on a subject you don't know about in spirituality, there isn't that sort of underweaving that makes you feel safe.
Yeah, I've remembered where I was going with that now, which was that when... So it is exactly that. It's the knowledge. It's the embodied knowing of another that's also the foundation of being able to speak and listen with nature, which is where we began with this conversation. And that it's becoming certainly a kind of, you know, it's an undercurrent in the left field culture, perhaps, that you and I exist in, but becoming slightly more mainstream too, as books like, what's it called? The Overstory by Richard... Oh, God, what's his name? It's the Richard Powers, is it? It's heaven. It's, I think it won the Booker Prize last year. The most extraordinary book. And one of the characters in it very much speaks on behalf of the trees. And I think it is so incredibly important that we understand as a, you know, little thread of subculture that you can't just march out and speak on behalf of. You have to know them.
Yeah.
Just as I couldn't speak on behalf of you until I knew you. And now maybe in some small way I could, because I'd kind of know what you were likely to say, which may include the words wanky and bollocks. but that true, deep, real knowing is so incredibly important to that conversation, which to me, that's a foundation of resilience, is deep, deep knowing of an other, whether they're a human or a tree.
Yes. And that connection, which is why it was so important for our group to start emphasizing the use of the upper room, because the joy in it was we were present together.
Together, yeah.
At a different level, but we were present together in that upper room. We held hands. We hugged people. You know, people say, well, it's just your imagination, but actually it isn't. It's a sign of intent that we are connected.
Yeah.
And I think if the more people do meditation or something like that in lockdown, where they can visit places with the other souls, incredibly healing.
Incredible. Well, and also just your imagination, just our imaginations are responsible for literally every single thing we have ever created.
Yes.
Just our imaginations made sofas and wheels and bloody whatever that laptop is, and, you know, the spinning wheel and rockets to the moon and. So just our imagination going and hugging somebody in an upper room is a powerful thing.
It is.
Yeah. And also it's not just your imagination, because that's a guided meditation, isn't it?
Yes.
So it's in partnership with the spirits, which is not just your imagination. But, you know, I can't overstate how the use of our imagination as a tool in service to the will and in partnership with the spirits is the foundation of probably every sacred practice ever. And so, so, so important.
Well, yes, in the Gospel of John, it says, in the beginning was the Word. But that's a bad translation of the Greek logos. And if you look at it in the mystical term, the logos is the plan.
Yeah,
it's the blueprint.
Idea.
So it's just the imagination.
Yeah.
The logos is the imagination of the great, holy, male, female, mother, father, whatever it is, the what's it, the great what's it, had an idea.
Yeah.
And the conception of this idea was the conception of life.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the blueprint. In the beginning was the imagination.
Mm. I really love in the beginning was the word, simply because in the beginning was the idea.
Mm.
And then the idea typically is transmitted through the word.
Yes. And there are some folk who say that that the divine sang creation into being, which is just so beautiful.
Well, it makes sense of universe.
Yes.
Oh, the one song.
Only in English, but it works pretty well. It's like, yeah.
What
dog
is it in Greek?
I don't know. Oranos is the universe, the heavens. Mm. Oranos, which is a bit like that snake.
Mm-hmm. Ouroboros.
Ouroboros, yes. But we have to stop now. We'll go back to that next week.
Okay.
Sorry about that.
Lovely to see you screenily.
Yes, maybe soon.
Yes.
Maybe soon. But we'll go upstairs and have a hug up there.
Yay!